This is the Bates Bobcast, our weekly podcast about the week that was in Bates Athletics. My name is Aaron Morse, and this week we're catching up with Ryan Smith from the class of 2023, who won the Vermont City Marathon on Sunday, setting a course record and qualifying for the Olympic trials. Plus, we chat with our Bobcats of the week, fresh off their strong showings at the NCAA Outdoor Track and Field Championships. And we preview the NCAA and IRA Championships for the rowing program. That's coming up on the Bates Bobcast. On Sunday, Ryan Smith from the Bates class of 2023 ran his first marathon, and he won it. Smith raced to the finish at the Vermont City Marathon in 2 hours, 15 minutes, and 52 seconds. It was good for a course record and qualified Smith for the United States Olympic Trials. We caught up with Smith to look back on his remarkable achievement. Well, Ryan, first of all, I mean, this was your first ever marathon. You graduated from Bates in 2023. Were you training for this for a while? Like, what first made you want to, I guess, run a marathon to begin with, I suppose?
Yeah, first marathon ever. Had never done one even for fun. You know, some people will just do the distance on a weekend. But for me, my longest run was, I think, 18 miles up until, you know, a month ago. I wanted to do a marathon since I graduated, not right away, but I did want to get to the roads pretty quick and do some of the longer races. I thought I'd be good at it. I mean, the longer the distance, the better I was in college. So was waiting to make that debut, but probably like a pretty classic story, just kind of dealt with injuries off and on. And, you know, something would spring up and that marathon debut at XYZ race would get postponed. And I really wanted to do one maybe this fall, but got my first serious injury in the fall. So got pushed back again. And, you know, training was going well. I wanted to do one in New England. I wanted it to be in the spring. And, you know, Boston, I think you need to have already qualified. I think you need to run a marathon prior to Boston. So VCM was the next best option for me. And Memorial Day weekend had pretty decent weather, so it ended up working out.
Yeah, working out. You won the whole thing. I mean, like, I read this article talking about how, like, the plan went out the window right away because you were out in front by yourself from almost the start, right? I mean, take us through the race. I mean, could you believe it that you were so far ahead of everybody, it seemed like?
I think that part of the magic for me was not knowing what to expect. It's really nice feeling like you have control of certain variables. And in terms of what finishing time I could run or how the race would play out, it really felt like a roll of the dice. I had no idea the other guys that were in the race. I didn't know them. I didn't know what kind of shape they were in. I don't follow them on Strava or anything. I did expect there to be a pack. Just going through the results, like usually the winning time was within a certain range. Third place was within a certain range. But I guess I got out a little bit quick. Just had some adrenaline. Just kind of felt good. Wanted to get out there. But I also think that the other people in the field didn't necessarily respect me. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean I had never ran one before. They probably assumed I'd come back. I actually was told this after the race, that the guys in second and third that were running together assumed that I would fall back to them eventually. And I think they hit a point in the race where they said, we're racing for second, because I went out a little bit faster than I intended, but within a certain range, and it felt comfortable. And yeah, just ended up being alone. I was okay with that. I run alone a lot of the time, so didn't feel like it was a disadvantage.
I'm curious, were there any points in the race that were tricky or anything, or was it pretty routine almost from start to finish?
There were some tricky parts in terms of there were some hills. I mean, if you've ever been to Burlington, Main Street is pretty hilly, and I knew that coming in. And it's placed at mile, it's two loops, it's like a figure eight, and you do it twice. So it's at mile 6 and mile 19. And anyone that's run a marathon knows that mile 20 is kind of where it starts, and that's where it starts to hurt. So that was a challenging part. As far as technical stuff, like knowing where to go, they had a police motorcycle with the lights on in front of me, and then a golf cart, and then two bikers just showing me where to go. So I did pretty well to turn my brain off, and I wasn't thinking about, you know, oh, I have to take this left or I have to take this right. I was just kind of zoning out. And there were a few instances where I literally would like snap out of it and be like, oh shoot, we're turning left, like right here. And you know, I'd slow down. It was very wet. It was raining, so it was tricky at all the sharp turns. But luckily, no. It was I didn't have anything that like tripped me up too much.
Rainy conditions, that can't be ideal. I mean, and yet you still set the course record. So, I mean, how rainy was it, I suppose?
It was really rainy when I first arrived, but once the race got underway, it was kind of a mist for most of it, and then it would kind of sprinkle a bit more, but definitely didn't feel like it was slowing me down. If anything, it cooled everything off. And the biggest complaint that the rain like created was there were some parts where I just had to navigate like a puddle. Like I didn't want to step in a puddle, so I just go around it. Like it really was more of a positive than a negative.
So your time qualifies you for the Olympic trials. Is this something in your mind now?
It's been on my mind since I was in college. This
Okay,
is
yeah.
a big deal for distance runners, and specifically those like me who are, you know, maybe more distance oriented. And when they graduated, they were ready to move up to longer distances. But that's not what this race was. I was not going here to qualify for the Olympic trials. I was here to run a marathon, compete, definitely compete, try my best, all that. But I really thought that a 218, like getting under 218, I would be very happy with. And that was the pace I wanted to set up for. I wanted to go through halfway on pace for that, and if I feel good, then I could speed it up. But I know in the marathon it's pretty hard to, even if you're going out more conservative, like you get it, you've been running for 13 miles, you're kind of in a rhythm. It's hard to break that rhythm and pick it up. I came through halfway and I realized I was a little bit faster than I planned, but Olympic trials were still not on my mind. The standard, by the way, is 2 hours 16 flat. So you need to run under 2:16. And I'm going, and it wasn't until mile 20 where I started doing some math in my head. And I started to add it up and I realized, you know, okay, unless I'm missing something and the numbers are wrong, like I'm pretty sure this is what I need to maintain through the finish to get under that time. And that, you know, it's 26.2 miles. I wasn't sure how much to account for that last 0.2, but it's close. And I waited, I do another mile, I hit mile 21, rerun the calculation, I'm close. And I basically play this game for like 20 minutes where I don't have any sense of comfort that like, oh, I'm way under, I've got this in the bag, but I also am not giving up on it. So I know I'm close. So there's no point in throwing in the towel. Like I just got to keep pushing as hard as I can. And even through mile 26, I still had no idea how realistic it was. I was just going. And then when I finally, there's like 50 meters of grass and you finally see the clock. And I was like, I got it. Like, oh my gosh. I can't even describe the shock and just the sheer like amazement. I mean, this was just out of this world. Yeah. Great feeling.
And so obviously the Olympics are in a few years. So in terms of the trials, what do you do from now until the trials? What's kind of the process like? What's next for you, I guess?
I viewed it like this. Every season from not including this one, every season, like this fall, the following spring, the following fall, every season was an opportunity to take a crack at it. This winter in December, I'm gonna go to California. I'm gonna run CIM, California International Marathon. I actually think it's like the US Marathon Champs. That was going to be my first attempt at running the standard. If I didn't get it, I was going to do it again this spring and so on. I just did it like first try and I
Right.
was not expecting it. So now what's next is definitely some downtime and some relaxation, some much earned rest, but I can shoot a little higher now and I'll have to think about how to frame that. Like if it's just going to be a faster marathon time or if there are other distances I want to maybe touch on first, but definitely shoot for whatever I think I can do. I mean, I thought I could do this. I just didn't think I could do it yet. So there's an extension of that where in the following years, I have hopes and dreams of running, you know, really fast. And I think I can just chase after those now. I don't think I need to wait. I have more to say about that, but yeah, I guess that's the plan for the short term.
That's great. And you mentioned in one of the interviews how you've been running with a lot of your classmates, your fellow Bates alums since graduation. Tell me a little bit about that.
Bates has so many alumni that live in Boston. Even if I'm leaving the house by myself, I'll see people I went to school with. It's great. I'll see t-shirts. And I love running with friends. I have a great network of people I can, you know, I'll get home from work, send a text, and within 20 minutes, I'm running with someone. I mean, it's just crazy how that works. And we have, you know, informal meeting times. You know, we're all equidistant from MIT. Let's all meet at MIT at this time and we'll make that plan, you know, before we go to bed. It's great. I feel like I'm a pretty motivated person and I love running. I can run by myself, but the reason I run is so that I can do it with friends, right? Like I don't only want to run by myself. I do this so that I can do it with others. There's no shortage of bobcats around, so.
Well, you mentioned, I mean, being in Boston. So the Boston Marathon has to be something you're going to run at some point, I imagine, right?
Yes, and what's funny about that is it I wouldn't have said that, 6 months ago. I wouldn't have wanted to run the Boston Marathon because it's not a t particularly fast course. It's pretty hilly. I mean, I run on the hills there. It's hard. But again, I don't have to worry about running the standard now. So I can do things like that. I can hopefully get into the pro field at Boston, which is just surreal. I mean, that's I think that has got to be like the biggest marathon, or that and London compete with each other. But to be able to like share the start line with genuine, Olympians is an opportunity I can't pass up on. It's right in my backyard, so that's definitely on my radar. I'm not going to say I'm going to do it, but I don't know why I wouldn't. I would have to have a good reason why I wouldn't.
Gotcha. You mentioned like you've been bad. Sounds like you've been battling some injuries. I mean, is this just are they were they stress related? Were they just freak incidents? Or how have you been able to get through these injuries to be where you're at now?
Yeah, one of them was a stress fracture, my first ever. And even before that, like right after graduation, when I was hitting the ground running, trying to get in great shape, I spent 6 months out with some IT band stuff, which isn't even that bad of an injury. I just couldn't shake it. Injuries happen. I mean, the nature of the sport, you're putting your body through a lot. And if you're like me, like I put it through a lot. But I really reframed my perception of injuries and what they are. And they're not like a pause button or a rewind button where you undo a bunch of training that you've. No, I've been pretty diligent at, keeping up some elliptical work, getting in the pool, getting on the bike, classic cross training stuff. Everybody does that, but I just maybe I just never lost confidence, but I haven't let them slow me down. I mean, I had 6 months off due to injury after I graduated. Then when I came back, I PR'd in the 5K after a few weeks of running. And then, this stress fracture was my most serious injury and the longest I've gone without any running. And then I slowly came back and I just ran 2:15 in the marathon. Not just a 5K, but like a long distance race. And I've had small nagging injuries, during training. And I'll pull the reins back a little bit and I'll, okay, let's relax. Let's not overdo it. So I've just been, smart enough to keep going, and it's worked out.
I imagine we'll be seeing you at the alumni meet for Bates Cross Country in the fall.
I've gone each year, Aaron, as you might know, like this is the current seniors, the graduating class at Bates. They were freshmen my senior year.
Okay.
So that means in the fall it'll be, no one that I overlapped with.
Gotcha.
So what happens with at the cross country alumni meet is once that happens, you take some time away. You don't go necessarily. You're not required to go to alumni. You wait like 20 years and then you go back when you're like 40. So
Right.
I'm gonna be entering that in between era and I have to decide, it's gonna be, but I heard Labor Day is late this year. It's in like September 7th or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't know. I gotta check because I'm moving apartments September
Oh,
1st.
but yeah, I mean, what's it been like coming back to campus these past few years and, seeing the guys who you're teammates with kind of go through their progression at Bates?
It's almost ironic to be like talking about the team as if I don't know any of them. I've kept in pretty regular contact with guys on the team I didn't overlap with. I think they're just a great group. I love the team. They've been dominating, like the 1500 and the 800. I've loved following along. They've been sending individuals to nationals pretty consistently. They sent to DMR again this year. I love following the team. I mean, Feldman coached me for a year. Coach Feldman. So he gave me workouts each week and we've been in regular contact. So I feel just as connected to the base team as ever. And it's been fun to follow along. It goes both ways. I know they follow along with me and I appreciate that.
Allison Leonard texted me about your achievement
Yep.
there, and I was like, "Oh my, this is awesome!" Any other thoughts you wanted to mention? Anything else you wanted to mention about the marathon? We haven't got to talk about anything else people should know about the day.
I mean, it's going like there's a video on Instagram
Yeah.
with I think 600,000 views. This is so overwhelming. I'm like, I've been so overstimulated by all of it, and it's all great. I'm enjoying my like 15 seconds of fame. It's a little bit, I've been reflecting on what this moment could have been like for other people in history. And I'm just realizing, I'm not sure if I'm ever going to be able to replicate this level of, shared enjoyment. Like, so many people are so happy for me, and it feels so great. So much support. But I also, like, I don't know if I'll ever have an accomplishment that means as much as this does right now. Like, making the Olympic trials so much sooner than I anticipated, this lifelong goal. Like, I wasn't expecting it, and I just went out and got it. And like, it's almost like this is as good as it gets. But I'm excited to try, like I said, like raising the bar, doing something even bigger. And I've enjoyed every step of the process. If I ran 2:16:20 and just missed it, I would have been over the moon because I didn't expect to run 2:16:20. So I just feel like this was the cherry on top, and I think I'm thinking about it the right way. And yeah, it's a dream come true.
How many people normally run in the trials? Like, is it a lot of
Yeah,
people?
that's a good question. So I think in 2024 for Paris,
Yeah.
they had 133 athletes. The standard then was 2:18, and they lowered it by 2 minutes to 2:16,
Yeah.
which is a pretty big gap. I mean, as you can imagine, like, the density curve of qualifiers, there's a lot more people running right under the standard than there are, a couple minutes below. So what that means to me is maybe it won't be that big of a field. So maybe it'll be closer to 100. But I'm the wrong person. I'm not. I don't know.
And
It'll be 100 to 200 or something like that.
then how many end up qualifying for the
Roughly.
Olympics? Probably not that many, right? Like
Three. You're
three.
only given 3 spots per country. Yeah.
Three. So out of 100
Yeah.
plus people, three make it. Okay, gotcha. Interesting.
Yeah, and even then, like,
Yeah.
out of the 100 people, I mean, 75% of them are just there to be there. They're not trying to make the team, right?
Yeah.
It's we know how hard it is to make the team. We're good at running in this country, so
Right. Yeah.
yeah.
Interesting. Well, looking forward to that in a few years, but looking forward to everything else you're going to do between now and then. And Ryan, thank you so much. I really
Yeah.
appreciate it. Join us on the Bobcast. Congratulations.
Thanks, Aaron. You're the best. I appreciate it so much.
The track and field program sent two current Bobcats to the NCAA Outdoor Championships over the weekend. Senior captain Ross Tejeda was joined by first-year Alessandra Lindos as the two competed on the big stage. Lindos earned second-team All-America honors as she took 15th in the triple jump, and she is our female Bobcat of the week.
Well, Alessandra, your first experience going to the NCAA championships, what were your major takeaways from, going out there to the Midwest, the trip and everything? What do you kind of bring back with you from that experience?
I think just being there in the moment was a very important thing to do. I went in with no expectations, as I said in a previous interview, and I was extremely surprised when I heard that I was All-American, well, second team. But yeah, it was such a great experience, and I think that, like, if given the opportunity, it is something that you should be able to fully indulge in.
What was the environment kind of like? Just give us an idea.
So first day we came in and there was just a bunch of like kind of groups of like everyone in their own event. So it was a very structured kind of practice environment. And then once we got to the actual competition, it was just like electric. So there was so much good vibes. There was so much cheering going on from the crowd. It was just all around amazing.
I was going to ask you because the event started on Thursday, but you had to wait until Saturday to compete. What was
Yes.
that? What's that wait like? How'd you handle that?
So one of my teammates, the other teammate that went with me, Ross, he had competed on Thursday, so I kind of put all my energy away from like my own head into like cheering on him and just making sure that he had my full support. Then Friday the coaches just kind of kept us busy, so we weren't just like, or at least me, so I wasn't finicky and just like worried about everything that was going to happen on Saturday. And then Saturday was the day, so we had breakfast, and then I just kind of like coasted until it was time for me to warm up and eventually compete.
Gotcha. And then tracking the event, the first jump you fouled, but your second jump was a jump that got you 15th, second team All-American, as we mentioned. So you fouled your first jump. What's kind of going through your mind? What adjustments you had to make? What were you kind of thinking about?
Fouling hasn't it's been like a very rocky road, and in high school I didn't foul at all. So starting off like college with just straight fouls and not getting out on the board in indoor D3s, I had fouled out of all my jumps. So I was just like, I hope this doesn't happen again. So I really just had to take the moment in and just be like, just reset my body, my mind, everything, and back up on the board and attempt it again, and it was good enough for 15th, so.
Yeah, and then what was the weather kind of like? I mean, was it good conditions to jump in? Because sometimes it can be, the weather can impact things a lot.
So the weather was pretty nice. It was roughly like 60 to 70 degrees. And it wasn't very sunny, so that's pretty good. So no one had like any heat exhaustion or anything like that. And I ended up finishing my last jump right before it started downpouring. So I was lucky enough to get out of there, and I got back inside, cooled down, and had a few drinks to, refuel.
Certainly. And did you get a chance to talk to your fellow competitors very much? Did you kind of like stay
Yeah,
focused?
I talked to a few of the girls that were in my heat, Chloe Hain or Hine, who had won the long jump. She was also with me, and she had actually had to leave for the 100 meter finals. So
Oh.
she did her jumps and then left and then came back, and she was all American for the 100 as well. So that was pretty fun.
Was it nice that you got to focus on just one event? You didn't have to do anything like that. Yeah.
It was nice only focusing on one event, but it was also kind of like nerve-wracking that I didn't have anything else to do. So it was like a win-lose situation.
As a first year, looking back at your first year of college track and field, what's some major takeaways? What's some major things you kind of experienced that you will reflect on moving forward?
I think just like being very attentive in practice and actually putting in the work is a very big important thing, because it all starts in practice. Like it doesn't just carry out. You don't just go out there and do amazing. Like you have to put in the hours, you have to put in the work. So that's something that I will definitely keep on doing in the years to come.
Great. I saw that the group got to do some sightseeing a little bit. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. We went on the La Crosse Queen, so we went up the Mississippi River, and it was really nice. We learned a lot about the city and its history, and we actually got stuck on there because there was a train that was stuck on the bridge that we had to go under. So we were stuck on there, but it was a pretty nice experience. It wasn't any like harsh conditions that we had to get through, so it was pretty fun.
How much traveling have you done in your life? Have you been in the Midwest before, or was this the first time for you?
This is my second time in the Midwest. I've gone to some of my cousins live in South Dakota, so I go there a few times over the years, or I've gone there a few times over the years. But my first time in Minnesota and Wisconsin, so yeah, that was really fun. We had to take two planes and a 2 hour drive to get to Wisconsin, so it's definitely something that wasn't really easy. So I didn't have any family with me there, unfortunately, but my coaches and teammates were more than enough support.
Great. Well, any other thoughts you wanted to share on your trip to Nationals? Anything else you wanted to mention we haven't got to talk about?
I would say they Wisconsin is very big on cheese. So
Yeah.
we got these little like squishy like stress balls that were cheese, like in the shape of cheese, and they had their little like NCAA stamp on them. So they really did their marketing really well. I will say that. But overall, I think they had a very beautiful facility, and they treated everyone with the utmost respect. So, yeah.
Alessandra Lindos, our female Bobcat of the week, second team All-American in the outdoor triple jump. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the Bobcast. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Tejeda just missed All-America honors, finishing 17th in the 1500 meters in his final race as a Bobcat. He outperformed his seed as Tejeda came into the race ranked 20th in the event. And Ross Tejeda is our male Bobcat of the week.
Well, traveling to Wisconsin was already fun with the coaches and stuff. And I would say outdoor, it's pretty much the same as indoor. They set you up, they get you in a little room with your competition, and then you kind of get lined up ready to go on the race. The race itself felt strong. I think we definitely went out hard. I believe we went around like 203 through 800, incredibly fast. But I was just trying my best to hold on to that top group and try to see if I could finish in the top four.
Yeah, certainly. And I mean, it looked like down the stretch, your analysis of the race kind of, you were still, faster than most of the people in the first heat, but it seems like the second heat, I think it had what, the national champion in there or defending national champion or something? He kind of set
Yeah,
the tone.
Ryan Hagen was really, really good. He
Yeah.
was racing hard, and the plan was really, because he was doubling along with another guy who was that top four. So I figured, if I went out and I tried to hold my position in that top four early, I'd have a pretty good shot to, kick when those guys could kick. But that last 250 meters, I hit a lactic wall, and then from there it's just trying my best to get as much turnover as possible.
Sure. As a senior captain, tell me a little bit about, your experience this year leading, being one of the leaders of the team. What was it like? What was it like seeing the team, have a lot of success, right? Winning the state title again. Tell me a little bit about that experience.
Oh, it was incredible. I mean, the whole reason I love the sport is we have such a big team, and we've had so many great performances. Not to mention, shout out Alessandra. She also came along, triple jump, finished, I believe it was like 15th overall, as a freshman, which is incredible. Also, she was holding like the top 15 spot in the country for most of the season, which is incredible too. And we also have Hannah, who, she didn't qualify as well, but she's running incredibly hard. Great performances on the men's side too. It's just good to see so many different young athletes coming up, and even some of those who were injured, and like juniors and senior and sophomores as well, who are just running so much better, improving their times, and I'm excited to see what's to come. So it was great. It was great being a captain of such a great group of people.
Yeah, you mentioned Alessandra, you being a senior, her being a first year. What was kind of your message to her about, because you've been to nationals before, what was your kind of your message about the experience, what she should focus on, or maybe just have fun, right?
I was telling her, I was like, "Hey, look. There, this is as underdog as you can get. You are a freshman. There's no expectations, but that's where you need to kind of put that pressure on yourself." And I think she handled it fantastically. She looked incredibly professional out there, jumping, talking to some of the other people on the teammates. She's gonna have a very bright future. I wouldn't be shocked if she goes to several other national competitions in the future.
Yeah, certainly. Well, looking back, I mean, you're a senior, so looking back on your time, not only track and field, but also cross country, what's this overall experience kind of been like from your perspective? What's the major thing you're kind of going to take away from being a Bobcat in season for all 3 seasons, all 4 years?
I think it brings a different level of discipline, and now I'm gonna get thrown into the real life, but I'm always gonna be a Bobcat. I'm always gonna be running. Like, this is my first, what is it today? Tuesday. It's supposed to be like a medium long run, so I just went out on like a nice 6 miler without the expectation of having a race at the end of the weekend. It's a big part of my life, and I cherish it.
Well, tell us a little bit about your post-college plans, perhaps.
Post college plans? Well, immediately post college, I'm gonna be traveling to Spain.
Nice.
I'm just doing like just ripping like 14 mile walks, which is gonna be it's like a pilgrimage in northern Spain. And then after that, I'm gonna be hitting New York City. I'm gonna be working at Bloomberg.
Bloomberg. Okay, nice. Excellent. So you got a job all lined up then.
All lined up, I'm ready to go.
Excellent, excellent. What are your thoughts you wanted to share on, outdoor nationals or anything else you want to mention we haven't got to talk about your time as a Bobcat here?
Well, I mean, I guess, shout out to the coaching staff. All I can really do is shout out other people. It really takes a village to face, a lot of the adversity, like in going to BU as a sophomore, and also going to nationals as a sophomore. It took a lot of guidance and a lot of mentorship, and I couldn't do it without the people that surrounded me, and that's ultimately where the success and the confidence comes from. And this weekend, this last nationals, I really got to notice that, it's like it's the people behind the scenes, like Coach Al, for example, doing all the behind the scenes work, and Coach Feldman, consistently coming with the energy and the training plans. At this point, it's my last week, and I'm just enjoying myself, reaping the fruits of my labor. All I can really do is just be grateful, and the gratitude has just been on an all-time high.
Excellent. Well, going out as our male Bobcat of the week. Not bad. Thanks so much for joining us on the Bobcast. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Aaron. Appreciate it.
The rowing teams are in Georgia and California this week, with the women's team competing at the NCAA Championships in Gainesville, Georgia, and the men's team competing in the IRA National Championship in Gold River, California. Head coach Peter Steenstra gives us a preview as heats take place this Friday, with finals set for Saturday.
Well, once again, we have NCAAs and IRAs overlapping this year, one in Georgia, one in California here. We'll start with NCAAs down in Georgia because that's where head coach Peter Steenstra is currently headed. Coach, how is the drive today with the boats?
The drive has been pleasantly uneventful, is the way we like to say it. Yeah, I'm currently in Gastonia, North Carolina. I bet you never looked that one up. But yeah, it's been smooth. No big problems. Just a little check engine light on the truck. But the truck's got a lot of miles on it. So anyone listening who's interested in finding us a new truck, we'd love to talk to you about it.
That's the next fundraising goal, is a new truck.
There you go. FBA. Let's keep it rolling.
And then, I mean, the team obviously from the women's side entering with a lot of momentum after winning the NESCAC title the other week there at NIRC. Tell me a little bit about how this team has come together really from the fall till now. Because, you know, in the fall, you know, they had a decent result, had the Charles. And it seems like in the spring, though, they've been really up in their game, if you will, each and every week, huh?
Yeah, I mean you're really asking me to dig deep. I have been in the truck for 19 hours alone talking, not talking to myself, but certainly conversations in my head been going around. Since the fall itself, you know, we had a few people abroad, but we had a lot of people that kind of stuck around. So it's hard to necessarily completely draw the line from then to now, but there's no question that additional mileage that we got through that fall was pretty important. Between that and just some team bonding that kind of happened, I think, particularly with having a small-ish older group and a very, very large younger group. And I think it was the older group, the sort of juniors and seniors that needed to work a little bit together. And I think the fall really did a lot of that for us, and the captains did a good job with working there. And then the winter happened, and of course I'm not involved, so that's where the captains really shined. But you know, when you look at where we are now with the spring, you know, this V8 lineup is the exact same lineup that I had at the very beginning down in almost exactly same thing in Florida, in fact. And the only change that we had really was a coxswain sort of thing back and forth for a little bit, but really, you know, it has a lot to do. And this is why I'm trying to loop it back to that fall group and the juniors and seniors working together, finding some common ground that they're standing on, because you're really starting to see it now, and it, you know, the last stage is that it's revealing itself in some boat speed, but being with them around the boathouse, you can see how well the group gets along and how much they've learned about each other and how much respect they have for each other. And they've really decided that, okay, we've put this much into it this far. Let's make sure that what we do now is going to make all of this additional effort really worth it.
And a lot of these rowers gained a lot of valuable experience last year's at NCAAs, right? I mean, that was first varsity eight last year, got a bronze medal. Second varsity eight was right there as well. Overall, fourth place. What do you think that experience last year helps out this group going back? Because I feel like a lot of the rowers were on last year's trip as well.
A lot of them were. I think the one notable who I believe wasn't, although I'm really going to be tested for my memory on this one, but Virginia Adams, a stroke seat of the 1V, was stroking the fourth eight last spring. So I'm, you know, there might be someone else involved in, you know, a big upward trajectory sort of movement, but that's the biggest one. But you would never know it chatting with her and all that. She's really got the role of being the stroke of a very competitive varsity eight. It seems to suit her quite well. She's got a lot of age and wisdom and experience behind her. So I think that kind of goes back to what you were just sort of alluding to, which is, yeah, getting back to NCAAs last year made a big, big impact. And that big impact was, oh, we like this. We want to do this again. And when we go back the second time, we want to make sure we improve upon what we just did this past year. So yeah, I think that was a big piece of the puzzle. And then the senior captains from last year who put in all that effort, you know, led the program, got them back, they were there at, in Worcester watching that varsity eight win the NIRC. And I don't think they would be terribly offended if I pointed out that there were more than a few tears as I was sort of getting congratulated by them. But there's no question that they knew that there was a direct line between how things ended last year and, you know, getting the program to where it is this year.
You mentioned Adams. Yeah. Stroke seat, fourth varsity eight last year, bronze medal NIRCs in the 4V. And now the stroke seat for the first varsity eight. I mean, as a sophomore, that's a big jump going from the fourth boat to the first boat. What allows her to do that? What allowed her to achieve that? And what does that say for other, rowers who might start off, quote unquote, lower boat to make that move?
I think that if you were to ask her yourself, I'm sure that one piece that she would bring up is that she was very much a first year in college last, I'll go back a whole year to the fall of her first year. And I don't know that she was fully committed to what was happening within the rowing part of her world. She was there, she was present. It's not like she wasn't doing everything she was supposed to do, but was she really putting in the additional work in order because she had real aspirations? I don't think she would say that that was the case her freshman year. But this year, it's pretty clear that things have changed. I've had a couple conversations with her, and she knows that this is something she actually has a bit of a talent in stroke seat that not everyone has. So she understands that with that talent comes some responsibility, and if she's going to be in that role, she's going to have to continue to earn it on a regular basis. And I think she made a decision sometime in this past fall that this is something she wanted to do and do well, and she enjoyed being in the Varsity Eight, I think.
Great. And then your coxswains were both at Nationals last year. Tell us about your two coxswains. We're going to have guiding the boats down the course there in Georgia.
I think they both have really come into their own. They're both very good, and I think that one of the reasons Brody ended up on the Varsity Eight is because that group of eight women really needed Brody in particular. And I think that Levy is the one who really benefits the JV Eight much better. So I could put those two coxswains in the Varsity Eight of any other program across D3, and I think that they would both do equally well. But as we discuss quite a bit around here, we are a V16, so I need two bow seats and two stroke seats and two engine rooms, and that goes right into that coxswain seat. I got to have two good coxswains, and they need to be able to understand that one may be more suited for that boat, and it just happens to be that that boat is the second boat. But the points are going to be really tight this year, so it could very well be the placement of those coxswains that ends up being the difference in the end.
What about Brody makes her ideal for that group, kind of the personality?
I think she's a bit of a psychologist. I think she really, even though they're in general, they're all older because there's a heavy junior and senior group aside from Adams. But I think that she's been able to sit back and listen to them and work with them and sometimes be out of the picture altogether. She might re remove herself from some conversations, but I think she's just a very smart person who has read into that group and has seen all the personalities and seen them come together as a boat. I think she knows how to hit just the right button at just the right time. I think that's something that she clearly has a knack for. And listening to her race over the NIRC, because we have a video of that, we have a recording of her coxing that. It's very clear that she understands how to maintain positive push regardless of what's happening in the race. She knows how to put that twist on it so that everything that comes out of her mouth is going to have some positive energy to it and helps to move them along. So I just really think that she's dialed in. She's inside their heads more than probably any of the eight of them would admit to.
And this course we're going to, not one Bates has been to before, at least not in your time here. It's a course that was used, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, in the 96 Olympics, hosted by Atlanta, of course. What do we know about this course? I know you've been there maybe once before with Ohio State when you were with them, but tell us about what we can expect here.
I think what we can mostly expect is inconsistent wind, if anything.
Okay.
That's the only thing I've been able to gather from anyone. It doesn't have like a dominant like a steady cross wind. It's not a steady headwind. It's just this race course that we get these storm cells that come through. And I drove through 87 rainstorms today. Went from downpour rain where I've got the trailer down to 45 miles an hour, and then 2 miles later it's bright hot sun and the roads are dry. So I think there's a lot of that that we can expect. If you check the weather for next this or for all of this week, it's PM thunderstorms, 45% chance every single day. And any one of those storm cells could come through and not just kick up some lightning, but kick up the wind, and it could get very swirly, or it could come straight down from the top and then get spread out all over the place, or it could actually be one very strong microburst that goes, one direction only. So I think there's going to be a lot of that where it's just inconsistent and unpredictable.
But we're racing in the morning pretty much, so I
Yeah.
don't think it'll impact us that much, probably, right? I don't know.
Well, it shouldn't as long as they're not changing any schedules, but we do have that possibility of the heats on Friday afternoon. So if we go to the Friday morning heat, and then if that doesn't go as planned, we may be in the reps in that afternoon, and that's where it could get a little bit touch and go.
So IRAs are in California. Obviously, you are only one person, and so you will not be able to be out in California. But Hannah Fitz, our assistant rowing coach, Bobtail,
Right.
of course, will be out there with the men's team.
Yep.
What's been your message to Fitz about running the show out there in California while you're in Georgia?
I think my message to Fitz has been pretty simple, which is don't try to be me. One of the reasons the guys love and respect you so much is because you're you. So don't change that one bit. And I think here's what I will say, and I don't mind that it goes across the airwaves here, but she's just not nervous about it. I think that what makes someone nervous is the bus going to arrive on time, or are the meals going to arrive on time, or all those logistical things that you have planned but you can't control at the same time. So that's the stuff that's pretty challenging. But I think everything with the racing will go very smooth. It's a beautiful race course. The weather there is far more predictable. She's going to have a lot of support with Wiley Anderson, who's the senior, who's going as kind of a team manager slash he's been a volunteer coach all spring, so he's been really terrific. So he's going to be very useful to her. And she we're on the Dartmouth trailer, and she knows all those Dartmouth coaches really well, and in particular the Dartmouth boatman, who was also he coached her a little bit when she was prepping and for single scull raising. But he's just going to be a very helpful person to have around. His name's Alan. Shout out to Alan. Yeah. So I'm not worried at all about her or the team being respectful of her. They're going to be great. She's going to, as long as she continues to be herself and the guys continue to be the guys that they've been all this year, I think they're going to come away with a very, very successful weekend in California.
And the message to the team kind of going out there, because obviously the women won the NESCAC, the men beat Colby, which was big. There are still about three teams ahead of them in within the conference, and thus kind of within IRAs a little bit. But tell me a little bit about what the team has on their mind, kind of, or what you've told them about what that's going to take to maybe continue to move up a little bit, right, when it matters the most.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're pretty excited because we finally did speed work for the first time. So, it's a big blanket statement to say we did speed work, but we did a lot of things at home since the NIRC regatta. I am patient, if nothing else, when it comes to prepping a crew for these things. We had them peaked and ready at that moment for NIRC, but the goal was to get to this regatta. So the goal wasn't to win NIRC, and then that wasn't even the case on the women's side. They just happened to do it. They peaked really well, and everything went well. So they got themselves a NESCAC championship. I think the guys, they put Colby. They had a really good race with Colby, and you could tell right from the start that Colby wasn't up for that one. But they'll be better, and I just know that our guys are going to have their sights on getting into the medals there at this regatta, because I know they can do it, and I know that we've done the work to get them there. We've given them all the guidance we possibly can. They're ready for it. They're prepped.
And one thing that's different about IRAs is you get to send a four also, which is interesting because there's no D3 fours race. So they're up against like the best of the best. So and they do a time trial. So that's a very different experience almost, right? If you're in that
Yeah,
fourth.
the time trial is just really fun. It is a development boat. It's a commitment from the college to send them, which is great. But having those guys in that event means that we've got four guys that are experiencing this thing on the biggest scale, you know, the collegiate rowing scale. We would be taking two spares anyway, and we already have a room, so it's not hard to just add these two other rowers to what we're doing. Doesn't even cost a whole lot more, really. A couple of plane tickets, you know. So getting the guys there to get another racing opportunity is really fantastic. It's an interesting group. You know, it's a really interesting four. Sarah McCara is driving the boat, and she's doing a great job with that. You know, we have a very tall stroke seat in Sam Williams, and we have a tall and large bow seat in Nick Hurl. And then these two much, much smaller guys, Logan Schlichter and then Jack Tierney, in the middle of the boat in seats two and three. I mean, Schlichter looks like a coxswain, and JT, as we call him, he's a pure walk-on novice. So he just learned rowing this spring because he had a broken foot or something all fall. So he didn't even row in the fall. So here he is, this pure walk-on guy, and he just won sea races every single opportunity he could, and there he is. He's going to the IRA. So it's a really great story to have someone like that in the boat.
Excellent. And then you mentioned McCara for the four, and then you also have obviously Chang for the first varsity eight, and then Shimizu for the second varsity eight. It's both their last regattas, right? Because Chang's a junior, but he's on the 3-2 program, and then Shimizu's a senior. So chance for these two coxswains who have, you know, they've been a big impact from day one here, haven't they?
I mean, Darian has, without question. Darian Chang has been the varsity eight since day one. And Micah Shimizu, he was a walk-on. You know, he learned everything here. He did not cox before he was here. So he's come a long way. I know that he's really got a good rapport going with that second eight because we're really freshman heavy in there. You know, I think we have four first years in that boat now. So it's he seems to have the right mentality for them. You know, he likes to compete. He's generally a pretty quiet guy. He is a captain, but he's never wanted to be that stand up and, you know, get everyone's attention sort of guy. He's not really that type of a leader, but he leads in different ways, and I think that he's really enjoyed working with these younger guys in the 2V, and you know, the boat's really coming along, so they're excited to race. I know that.
I get the style there for leadership. I feel like Luke Demijohn in the 1V, another captain, he's more of a more vocal type captain. Is that fair?
Yeah, he's definitely the strong type. He's been leading the charge from day one, and there's no question that I think he has real aspirations and goals for the overall team in mind, even after he's gone. I think he's one of those guys that's going to be involved forever. And Kelly McKegg is the third captain, and he's in right in the middle of the 2V. So I think having some age and leadership in that boat is quite useful.
Excellent. Well, don't forget, folks, we'll be having the men's IRA behind the scenes Instagram takeover story on Go Bates Podcast. Benji Richards in the 2V will be leading that. So that'll be fun. And we'll have Peter and everyone down in Georgia for NCAA's. A big week coming up. Coach, any other thoughts you wanted to share about these two regattas? Anything else you wanted to mention we haven't gone to talk about?
No, I just really appreciate that you know, the department has done what it needs to do in order to get the guys out to California. This is not an NCAA regatta. It's something a little bit different. So with the women going NCAA, there's NCAA dollars behind it. And so to send the men's team across the country to race at the very highest level that we were allowed to do is a big commitment by the department. And you know, Stacey Bunting, and you know, she and never hesitated when I told her about it, which she got on the job, and it's one of the first things we mentioned to her was, oh, by the way, if we make it, we got to get 23 people out to California. And so we talked about it from day one, and there was never a question of course, if they make it, we're going, so we'll figure it out. So I really appreciate that from Stacy and from everybody else involved.
Excellent. And don't forget, for fans of Bates Rowing, we need a new truck. So we'll just
That's right.
Put that out there.
Anyone's interested.
Yeah. All right, Coach Teamster, thanks so much for joining us. And we'll get some rest here after your long day of driving. So
that's right.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Aaron.
Next time on the season finale of the Bates Bobcast, we'll wrap up the year in Bates Athletics with a focus on how the rowing teams do at their respective national championships. Keep up with all the latest Bates Athletics news by going to GoBatesBobcats.com, and we'll catch you next time on the Bates Bobcast. We'll be right back.